Good morning. How's the week been? Weather's been better? When has the weather been better? Oh, I gotcha. It's been better than the heat. All right. Yeah, but you know when the heat goes, you know what comes out?
Cold.
No. The gnats. Yes. If you were on a grass field this week, the gnats were nipping. Because the cooler it gets, they have no longer any reason not to be jumping and flying and saying hello. They like to stay down in the dirt whenever it's hot. When it gets cool, they come. I guess God had to give us gnats. That way, everybody wouldn't want to come live here. No, gnats are around pretty much any time. It's just a matter of they come out when it gets cool. So if at night, if it doesn't ever get cool, they don't come out too much. Now, we can kill them whenever it gets really, if it freezes, it kills the gnats and the mosquitoes. And we have a little bit. So what other kind of trouble have you had this week? Now, I told you that I was going to be asking you, what good has doing this run-through on the book of Job been? If it doesn't change the way we think and it doesn't change the way we live, what good is it doing this? So it's got to be having an impact on the way we live and the way we think, or else we're just whistling in the graveyard. How has going through Job, how has it changed either the way you think or the way you live? Trouble, suffering, difficulty, adversity, all those words we use for stuff we don't like to encounter. We've got to learn something from this. Got to. Because the whole idea is, essentially, as we look at the book of Job, are we going to allow the example of this guy and all that he went through and the way that God worked in this situation, are we going to allow that to be the thing that we build our understanding, our theology of trouble on? Or are we going to go to default mode and kind of depend on our own thoughts whenever we encounter trouble? You know what I mean? You know, so we talk a good game, we get there, and then we have trouble, and then the first thing we do is what we did before we ever heard God say anything. All right, so we're going to look at chapter 17, which is a second chapter of Job. And then if we get through 17, then we're going to look at Bildad, which we can pretty much deal with in like three questions, because that's the way Bildad talks. Let's look at Job. We're looking at Job 17. We're going to kind of look at 1 through 5. We'll kind of take a break, then we'll jump a little bit. So Job says, "My spirit is broken. My days are cut short. The grave awaits me. Surely mockers surround me, and my eyes must dwell on their hostility." Does that accurately reflect what you think he's dealing with? How does he feel? That's all we can do at this point, is talk about how he feels. So who's mocking him? Okay, the three amigos. Okay. And yeah, would you say that they've been he has felt that they've been hostile toward him? It's not just towards the situation, because they continually want to point fingers at him, right? Which we will see more of if we get to chapter 18. So he goes on and says, "Give me, O God, the pledge you demand. Who else will put up security for me?" So that demonstrates relationship. He's depending on God. "You have closed their minds to understanding. Therefore, you will not let them triumph." So he knows that these folks who are making these statements that claim to be supporters and encouragers, that the things that they're purporting, he knows God is not going to affirm those things because they're not true. He knows it. He says, "If anyone denounces their friends for reward, the eyes of their children will fail." So what's he saying in that verse 5? If anyone denounces their friends for reward, the eyes of their children will fail. So who's denouncing their friend? Three amigos, Brian says. They are denouncing who? Okay, they're denouncing Job because he doesn't fit their theological perspective and he won't give. So all they can do then is accuse and point fingers. And so they are denouncing Job as a sinner, an unconfessed sinner. Does he know something we don't know? If anyone denounces their friends for reward, the eyes of their children will fail. Who's getting a reward?
Okay. That is an answer that makes sense within the context. Okay. Are you going to say something, Priscilla? Okay. So, since they're denouncing him, that when their case is proved, then their status goes up. Is maybe that they'll be rewarded with a higher, it could be, yeah, maybe God will reward them or others will see them as being right and vindicated and truly holier than somebody else, right? Okay, that works. All right. And then what about that thing about the eyes of their children will fail?
Like block being blind.
Ooh, yeah.
So if somebody denounces their friend in order for their own advancement, so they'll be seen as being more, the eyes of their children will fail. How does that happen? These guys get elevated whenever somebody else then thinks that they're right. So how does that affect the eyes of their children? And is that literal or is that figurative? Okay, so what would that be? So there's a mark, there's an inability whenever someone takes this road to justify their own stuff and ignore their own stuff and accuse others, and there's a blindness. Didn't Jesus call the folks that were the finger pointers, he called them blind guides? Well, here we've got Job saying the very same thing. That these guys are blind guides, and your blindness will hit your next generation. The same spiritual blindness that exists in you will continue to exist in those that you rear, whether it be your own children or those that follow in your spiritual footsteps. Don't doubt it.
Just like what you said.
Yeah. But he's very accurate. The idea is that same spiritual deficit that exists in them will be passed along to those that come in their foot. All right, so let's move on. So God has made me a byword, Job being honest, to everyone. A man in whose face people spit. My eyes have grown dim with grief. My whole frame is but a shadow. The upright are appalled at this. The innocent are aroused against the ungodly. The upright are appalled at this. The innocent are aroused against the ungodly. So what is Job saying in verse 8? The upright are appalled at this, his condition, and the innocent are aroused against the ungodly. Yeah, John. So the upright are appalled at Job's condition and the way that he's being treated. The innocent are aroused against the ungodly. Who's ungodly? So we've got to think through this and kind of work through it because it's not quite as straightforward. It's like there's things being said behind what's being said in almost every statement. Okay? So God has made Job a byword to everyone. He's a man in whose face people spit. In other words, they treat him a certain way. He feels like these three comforters are doing that. Truth is, his eyes have grown dim with grief. He is grieving. His whole frame is but a shadow. That's correct. The upright are appalled at his condition and the way people are treating him. And the innocent are aroused against the ungodly, the people who would treat someone like this. So we're looking at the whole thing, not just the sentence before. It's look at two sentences before, and we see that he's not talking about his own condition that people are appalled at. It's the way he's being treated. Nevertheless, he says, the righteous will hold to their ways, and those with clean hands will go stronger. So is it true what he says in verse 9? Is it true that the righteous will hold to their ways, not the self-righteous, but the righteous will hold to their ways, and those with clean hands will grow stronger? I think so. What does trouble do in our lives? That's why I'm trying to work through it. Absolutely. That's why I'm trying to work through it and see what's related to what. Because sometimes we already have things set in our mind that are being said. And no, I don't think that's what he's saying. I think he is correctly casting the situation. Okay, so he's saying, regardless of all this,
that righteous folks are going to hold to their testimony about what's going on, even though they stand in the face of accusation. Now, and that those with clean hands will grow stronger. I'm telling you, this is the core of what I believe this whole book is about. You might even say this is the theme verse for what's going on here. This is the thing that anytime we hear somebody in China is put in jail, or somebody in Iran is put in jail for their faith, someplace like that, this is what we are hoping they hold on to. Does that make sense? And that is that their suffering has meaning, and that this will be accomplished in their life, and that they will be able to trust God and believe that. Because again, we go back to the beginning of Job. The worst thing in the world is to have any doubt that suffering has meaning, or trouble has meaning when we endure it. All right, John, let's go to the next slide. So in verse 10, he says, "But come on, all of you, try again." So now he's addressing his comforters again. "I will not find a wise man among you. My days have passed, my plans are shattered, yet the desires of my heart turn night into day. In the face of the darkness, light is near. If the only home I hope for is the grave, if I spread out my bed in the realm of darkness, if I say to corruption, 'You are my father,' and to the worm, 'My mother or my sister,' then where then is my hope? Who can see any hope for me? Will it go down to the gates of death? Will we descend together into the dust?" What choice is Job making? Okay, he's choosing to have faith. He's choosing how to see all this. I'm not saying he's not miserable. Hang in there. Okay, but what is he choosing? Where do you see what he's choosing? Night into day, in the face of darkness, light is near. Why would that rankle these comforters? He's saying, you know, he's talking to God. He's wrestling with God. He moves back and forth talking to them and talking to God. And every time he turns his attention and does one of these Hamlet-like asides and starts talking to God, that it just drives those three guys crazy. So how does this choice that he has speak to us in trouble? He's making the choice. Not one of us have had half of what happened to Job happen to us. Now, we feel like it. We do. We run out of money. We get sick. We can't control it. Somebody we love has something happen or dies and lose their job. And, you know, all of a sudden, the world that was so rosy because we depend so much on circumstance, we begin to see it differently. That choice that Job makes in the middle of all this trouble is to see light overcoming darkness, and light being near as opposed to far. What else do you want to say about 17? About how Job sees things. We should be so strong. All right. So let's look at the knucklehead. Let's go to first slide on 18, John. This is Bildad. He's heard this. He's heard what Job has said. Here's Bildad. Bildad the Shuhite replied, "When will you end these speeches? Be sensible and then we can talk. Why are we regarded as cattle and considered stupid in your sight? You who tear yourself to pieces in your anger, is the earth to be abandoned for your sake, or must the rocks be moved from their place?" So how do you think Job really does regard these guys? Bildad thinks that Job is saying they're stupid. How has Job addressed these guys? Think about it. And has he really said they're stupid, misguided, naive? As much respect, you know, isn't it funny how sometimes people who want to be the judges, when you say anything about what they've done in their judgment, anytime they begin to say you've done things that you really haven't done? Because, you know, whenever we get into this back and forth, sometimes it gets a little heated and we kind of go to the next knot, you know, next thing up. So the key is,
We need
to remember not to engage and ramp up the rhetoric. We need to remember to stay true to the truth. We can speak boldly to the truth and call things the way they are, which is what we ought to do. But at the same time, not bow to sin and attack other people. All right. Now I'm going to tell you, from here on out, we're going to deal with a whole series of things here. So hang in there. We're going to end up at about verse 20. Starting with 5. So hang in there, because it's statement after statement after statement. This is Bildad. The lamp of a wicked man is snuffed out. The flame of his fire stops burning. The light in his tent becomes dark. The lamp beside him goes out. The vigor of his step is weakened. His own schemes throw him down. His feet thrust him into a net. He wanders into its mesh. A trap seizes him by the heel. A snare holds him fast. A noose is hidden for him on the ground. A trap lies in his path. Terrors startle him on every side, and a dog his every step. Calamity is hungry for him. Disaster is ready for him when he falls. It eats away parts of his skin. Death's firstborn devours his limbs. He is torn from the security of his tent and marched off to the king of terrors. Fire resides in his tent. Burning sulfur is scattered over his dwelling. His roots dry up below and his branches wither above. The memory of him perishes from the earth. He has no name in the land. He is driven from light into the realm of darkness and is banished from the world. He has no offspring or descendants among his people, no survivor where once he lived. People of the West are appalled at his fate. Those of the East are seized with horror. How would you describe all those things that Bildad has just unloaded? Okay. Redundant in that this is simplistic legalism 101. The world works this way. That's right. It is a rehash of all the platitudinal statements that they have said about the way the world works, the way right and wrong work, the way that you tell good and evil. This is like enough. That would make a good Halloween movie. That was a lot of really awful stuff. If you look at the progression of what he's, it's kind of like, this is the traditional slippery slope. He's saying, once you do this, it all goes to hell in a handbasket. That's right. And from his vantage point, who's on the tail end of people of the West are appalled at his fate and those of the East are seized with terror? He's looking at Job and saying, look at the end point. That therefore, if the end point is true, that means that the starting point is true, and his starting point is, you're proud, you're in sin, and you won't confess it. That's why you are at verse 20. Aren't you glad that not every believer has this perspective? Who would pray for anybody in a difficult situation if we had this perspective? You see where I'm going with this? In the name of helping him get right. So in verse 21, he says, surely such is the dwelling of an evil man. Such is the place of one who does not know God. Bottom line, what is he saying about Job? Why does Bildad need Job to confess?
Yeah. At times, the church struggles with people who are in the middle of dealing with their trouble, forgetting that we're all in the middle of dealing with our trouble. And that sometimes, if we will support and bless other people, that on the other side, they do come out stronger. And it's better that we not be more concerned about being right than we are about being Jesus. And we had that vantage point because we're far on the other side of God's revelation. But yet we see,
We see all these things sewed into what Job is going through and what's being said. Again, we see the seeds of what Jesus was doing, who he was, in things that Job says. We talked about it last week. That desire for an advocate, someone to be there for us with God. So who? Got to be careful about this. We know that Job does know God. Doesn't mean he knows everything, but he does know God. So what does this say about the difference between religion and relationship?
If we can perform a ritual, or we can do something religious, and believe that that obligates God to do something because we have done a ritual, who serves who? Life's a whole lot less neat and tidy. There's a lot more need for grace when things are messy.
Yes. Yeah, if we didn't know that God said, he's my guy. Yeah. Yeah.
We have a double advantage. Because not only do we have that, but we also have the good news of Jesus Christ. We have that perspective and that perspective that we can then look back and see what was going on and understand what Job was going through in a way that Job never was able to see what Job was going through. But that's why hindsight's 20/20. At least it ought to be, right? But there are some people that don't even like 20/20 whenever you write history. Those things happen. Trouble, faith, trust, allowing the trouble to work in us, the things that God wants it to work in us, and trusting that God is not that far away. And that it doesn't mean that necessarily everything goes away. And you can't recover everything that's been lost. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that God is not working in the situation. One thing that as I've looked at my friends, the things that my friend's wife is from college has posted on Facebook, every single time she writes, the things that she says are, we trust that God is going to work in Pearson's life and work for God's purpose and will. We just don't know what it is yet. There's a grown-up. There's somebody who understands Job, even if she's not referring to Job. All right. Artie, why don't you close us in prayer? Would you do that? Thank you very much. Going for that word? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'll think about it. Imputed, that makes a good, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. Yes, imputed sounds good. Ascribed would be accrued or imputed. I think either one of those. Accrued, imputed, it sounds...